This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming up next hour on the show, Alabama tight end Irv Smith. He is one of the highly projected tight ends of this upcoming NFL draft in April, perhaps the number one tight end on the board. We'll talk to Irv coming up here next hour on the show. This hour, I'm a little disconcerted right now. I'm a little out of sorts. I woke up today, and I was excited about week number three in the Alliance, the AAF. Frankly, I've really enjoyed the games over the first 2 weeks of the season, and Orlando versus San Antonio was a really good watch on Saturday, or on Sunday early afternoon. And yet, I wake up to a story today that the owner of the NHL's Carolina Hurricanes had to pump $250 million into the Alliance after week one because they were short on payroll.
I am the epic fail.
Number one, these guys are making $80,000 a year. $250 million bucks? You just bought the league for the next 20 years. They didn't need $250 million, I don't think. They're not building stadiums. They just got to keep the lights on at Sun Devil Stadium for a weekend. These guys are making $80K. Where is all of this money going? Number two, they nearly didn't make payroll in week one? It's week one! So I will discuss this in depth coming up here in about 15 minutes from now, but this is not the news I was looking for today. This is not the news I was looking to wake up to today. I don't know. I'm already so distraught. Also, later on in the hour, the greatest sneakerhead discovery ever. But I want to begin this hour with something that Rob Manfred said over the weekend about Major League Baseball. Manfred, the commissioner of MLB, still we know that neither Bryce Harper nor Manny Machado have jobs, have contracts at this point in time, and all pitchers and catchers have reported, and coming up this week, full-on spring training. And then we'll have spring training games, and this is weird. It's like a little weird. Because, let's face it, the equivalent of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado in any other league would have been snapped up already. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Anthony Davis and Bryce Harper are somewhat peers in this. I mean, maybe they're not the best player in the league, but they're one of the best players in the league, and they're in their physical primes, and they want to move zip codes. In basketball, obviously, one guy means way more to your success than one guy in baseball. Bryce Harper can't pitch, Bryce Harper can't close, and Bryce Harper can't hit one through the other eight spots in the lineup. Anthony Davis has a higher impact on the game with five guys on his team than Bryce Harper does with nine guys in the field and obviously a 25-man roster versus, let's face it, in basketball, there's only probably nine or 10 guys at most that you would use, usually more like six or seven. But Bryce Harper is in his physical prime. Bryce Harper is a former MVP. Bryce Harper is one of the best players in baseball and still didn't have a job. Could you imagine if Anthony Davis hit the open market as a free agent July the 1st and didn't have a job by October? That'd be so weird. Like, so weird. It would be bizarre if on the eve of the basketball season, Kyrie and Anthony Davis hadn't signed contracts yet because they hadn't gotten the money that they wanted. Part of the problem is that not every team is into spending money and into trying to win right now. In baseball, a culture of build a farm system, have them all come up together, and then strike during that window, strike while the iron's hot in that window, has become soup du jour. This is the game plan in baseball. And so this eliminates a swath of the league that just isn't ready to spend money at this point in time or doesn't want to spend money at this point in time. And that has been the criticism from players. Hey, how many teams are really trying to win here? Here is Rob Manfred responding this week.
We've had a lot of change in the game. People think about players differently. They analyze players differently. They negotiate differently. Agents negotiate differently. So, you know, everybody seems to approach this issue from the perspective of, gee, why aren't the clubs signing players? I think there's lots and lots of offers out there, and it's a bilateral process. Players haven't accepted those offers yet. That's how a market works. So, you know, we bargain for a market system. That market's out there operating, and I don't have any choice but to live with that right now.
Manfred defended the owners, defended his teams by saying everyone's trying to win, which, see, that's something that you could really parse. Is every team in baseball trying to win? It depends on your definition. Because if you'd said, well, every team on a daily basis is trying to do what's best in the spirit of winning eventually, then the answer is, yeah, okay. The Miami Marlins are not trying to win right now. They weren't trying to win last year. They sold off all their good pieces. They're not trying to win right now. But Derek Jeter would tell you, well, we're trying to win eventually, so this is how we do it. This is the best plan in motion to win. The Oakland Athletics came into last season with the lowest payroll in baseball, and they made the playoffs. Were they trying to win last year? I mean, the evidence would say you don't have to spend money, but yet you can try to win. The Tampa Bay Rays didn't seem like they were trying to win, but they ended up with 90 victories. So it's hard because every owner can say, well, we're trying to win. There's just different ways to try to win. One is spending money. One is trying to build a farm system and not paying anybody. I think the difference is you can make the argument every team's trying to win, but not every team's trying to win now. And it's very convenient for a lot of these owners to now have the example of the Houston Astros and the Chicago Cubs. The Astros and the Cubs stripped it down. They were down to the nuts and bolts. They'd stripped that bad boy down for parts and sold everything and said, we're going to lose. We're going to lose big. And you'll have to grin and bear it because we're trying to lose right now. But we'll build the farm system via losing. We'll get these guys all coming up at the same time. We'll draft and develop, and then when they're all up, then we'll make a move to spend some money and try to win a championship. And it worked for both of them. The Houston Astros lost and lost and lost some more, lost and lost and lost some more, and got Carlos Correa and George Springer and Alex Bregman out of losing. And then they added Justin Verlander, and then they won a title. The Chicago Cubs lost and lost and lost and lost and lost. And they got Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez. And then they went out and spent on Hayward. They went out and spent on Lester. And they won a world championship. And so now owners have the most convenient excuse ever. My analytics department is telling me I don't have to spend money on aging players. My general manager is telling me I don't have to spend money on aging players. My analytics department and general manager are telling me I need to spend money in the farm system, and that's a fraction of the cost of Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, or other players. This works for me. Oh, and I'm getting revenue sharing, and we've signed a huge television deal, and we've got the best digital media income out of any professional sports league, so I'm making money, and the people aligned to tell me how to spend the money are telling me don't spend a lot of money. Great! This is awesome! Because guess what? A general manager also extends his window of earning $800,000, $1 million, $1.5 million a year if he wants to go slow build. A general manager that says we're going to win right now, right now, right now, is on the hot seat from day one. Brody Van Wagenen has walked into the New York Mets organization and said, we're the team to beat in the National League East. We're going to win. Guess what if he doesn't win in 2 years? He gone. If Brody Van Wagenen came in and said, slow build, it's going to take us a long time, we'll draft and develop, but we're going to lose 100 games over the next 3 years. He gets 6 years. So it works for the general manager, and it works for the owner, and it works for the analytics department. And so this is the crosshairs. How many teams are in a win-now mode in baseball? Not many. And that's why the market has shrunk on Machado and Harper. I just did MLB Network yesterday, got to join the panel of MLB Now. Dan O'Dowd, former GM, was on the panel. Ron Darling was on the panel. And I kind of made the remark, you know, if the Phillies do end up signing Bryce Harper, which it seems like they're right now the leaders in the clubhouse, I guess this eliminates them from Mike Trout in a couple of years. And they all said, nope, don't think so. They want Mike Trout. This could be Harper and Trout. Well, could you imagine if the two best players or two of the best players in baseball were on the Philadelphia Phillies merely because nobody else really wanted to spend the money at that point in time? That the Phillies said, we'll clear out the two max deals, kind of like what the Lakers or the Knicks or the Clippers or the Nets or other teams are trying to do in basketball, and said, we'll do it in baseball. We'll sign two max deals. It'll be Harper and Trout. Again, you'd be kind of talking about like there's four teams in baseball that really want to spend money and then nobody else really does. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. And yet, can you hate on the Mariners right now? The Mariners kind of hit a wall. And they said, you know what? This is not working. Let's strip it down. And the A's have done this year after year and still made the playoffs. And the Astros and Cubs did this and won World Series titles. And the Royals did this and ultimately won a World Series as well. I mean, it's hard to argue with that game plan because it has worked, even though it feels like you're not really trying. When we come back here on the show, this Alliance story has me all types of rattled today. They needed $250 million of emergency investor money in week one. Oh, no! DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
Shout out to my family. If loving DA is wrong, I don't want to be right.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Happy Trash Tuesday to you, boys and girls. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, okay.
We appreciate you spending some time with us and coming up this hour on the show. We've got your best audio of the day, and we've got the best sneakerhead discovery story ever. Next hour, Alabama tight end Irv Smith, one of the highest rated tight ends in the upcoming NFL draft out of Alabama, is going to join us coming up at hour number three. Also, a brand new episode of Nomad is out. I released it last night. It is the story behind Mraz and I being able to ride in the Nutmobile, the Planters Nutmobile Super Bowl week in Atlanta with Mr. Peanut. We took Mr. Peanut out to lunch at the Varsity, the iconic drive-through burger joint in Atlanta right near Georgia Tech's campus. So that's available on YouTube right now. Search my name and Nomad, and you'll see this week's episode, the most recent episode of the travel series I have, and what it's like to have a dance party in the Varsity with a peanut in a top hat. I have to read a tweet that hurts me. It hurts me. Because I think I've been very transparent in my love of the Alliance. I think that's been very obvious. We held an AAF draft here on the show where we had signing day and we chose our teams. I'm all in on the Hotshots. Bilotti, the Memphis Express. Mraz, the Orlando Apollos. Bogish is a San Diego Fleet season ticket holder. Well, not really, but he's all in. And Andrew Kaplan's a Birmingham Iron guy. Mraz, we discussed yesterday, is looking at flights to Birmingham to go see an Apollos Iron game. We do on Mondays every week Alliance Primetime. We go out and get highlights from the Alliance, including their radio deals. We have put more energy and effort into the Alliance than any other thing we do on this show. I'm actually asking Mraz to do work, and he's doing it. Mraz wrote up an entire Up the Gut blog with his reactions to week number one of the Alliance. I've watched 5 of the 8 games in their entirety. Mraz has watched 7 of the 8. We're sickos. We're masochists. We love football. We love fringe sport. We love renegade leagues. And so we're all in. And then I get this tweet from Brent. And Brent, you don't know me. Brent tweets, the reports that AAF payroll is in danger are unconfirmed as of now. Yet you pass it off as fact and that the AAF is in trouble. You are nothing but a typical media hack that is worse than the Onion. At least people know that news is satire there and not true. Brent, you don't have very good reading or listening comprehension. If you think I would flippantly discuss the bankruptcy of my favorite football league ever outside of the NFL, which I have a love-hate relationship with, and probably the USFL, maybe the World League of American Football. But other than that, perhaps XFL, first 2 weeks of the season. Outside of that, well, then there was also the World League in the 70s and NFL Europe as well, and the Arena League. But outside of that, this is my favorite NFL or football league ever. Stop putting words in my mouth. I am not trying to push off false narratives. I'm here to save the AAF. You heard me. I'm doing highlights and league notes on a weekly basis here on the show. So, Brent, get a clue.
Get him out.
Get a clue. Brent's Twitter handle says, well-traveled, educated, outgoing, treats everyone the same, educated on the political climate of America. Go Buckeyes.
I am the epic fail.
Get him out.
You, my friend, don't understand anything if you think I'm trying to take down the AAF with false narratives. You don't understand anything. You don't understand what I'm made of, how my heart beats, that I've got Alliance blood. I've got Hotshots blood running through these veins. I don't know if that's yellow or green or red because they got a lot of colors in their uniform, but I'm bleeding Hotshots. Kay, are you? I've watched the entirety of both Hotshots games, 2 of them. I witnessed start to finish the greatest game in Alliance history, Orlando San Antonio on Sunday. I watched the whole thing. I have seen the best game in league history, so stop putting words in my mouth, you bozo. Now I'm miffed. because originally I was sad. I was sad at this report because according to The Athletic, multiple sources tell The Athletic the new league's existence was in jeopardy. According to sources, there was an enormous problem, one that became obvious even before week number two. The league was running short on cash and quickly. Without new investors, there was a good chance it was going to miss payroll last Friday. Miss payroll? It's week two. You're on the NFL Network. Your games are on CBS and the CBS Sports Network and Turner. How are you missing payroll in week two? One source told The Athletic, without a new nine-figure investor, nobody is sure it would have happened. You can always tell people their checks are going to be a little late, but how many are going to show up on the weekend for games where they don't see anything hit their bank accounts on Friday? Darren Revelle, ESPN sports business reporter, said that in league circles, teams were simply telling agents their players would get paid, but that last week there was a glitch in the system. I hate when the glitch happens in payroll.
It's a lot of money!
However, multiple sources say the AAF will announce that Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon, a self-made billionaire from Dallas, has now committed $250 million so that the AAF can meet its obligations. Hey-o!
It's a lot of money!
We're back in business. We're back in business. The AAF is going to have week three. We're back in business. Football is here. Las Vegas had put odds on its championship winner. The Orlando Apollos were the league favorite. The Hotshots were number two at the best odds. One of the things you could bet on in Vegas, however, was if there is no championship game played. Which was Vegas covering its own arse and saying there's a possibility this league won't make it to the championship game. Look, am I excited that somebody pumped in $250 million to my second favorite professional football league? Yes. But I have to ask this question. Why did it take $250 million? These guys are making $80,000. I mean, it doesn't cost $250 to cover payroll in the Alliance. There's only eight teams. I did a little bit of back-of-the-napkin math here. Eight teams, let's say 50 players per team. That's 400 players times 80,000. That's only $32 million to cover player payroll. I don't think there's $220 million wrapped up in coaching and staff salaries. So this Carolina Hurricanes owner could have just given them $30 million and that would have covered them for the entire year. They're only trying to make payroll like right now. They've had no tickets sold for the next couple of weeks. They've had no championship game, playoffs, obviously a boon, I'm sure, to their investments. I mean, do we really need $250 million? I mean, I'm glad that it's there, but this guy, I think, overspent a little bit. Number two, though. This guy was promptly named chairman of the AAF. So he paid essentially the cost of paying every player for the next 10 years, owning every organization, every team, and maybe even buying the leases on the stadiums. Because this guy just invested way more money, I think, than he had to. And so he was promptly named chairman. So I love it. This Dundon guy, I'm all in. All in. He owned the Hurricanes, and now he owns the entire football league, I think, for the next 20 years of the Alliance. So what does this mean? It means one thing. Alliance Primetime lives to see a week three. And that's what it's truly all about. When we come back here on the DA Show, a little best of your audio on the day, including John Henry, owner of the Red Sox, on spending questions around Major League Baseball and the greatest sneakerhead discovery story ever. DA, CBS Sports Radio, the voice of Alliance Primetime, is here with your headlines. He doesn't want to see the league go under either. Brent. Yeah, Brent. Take that, Brent.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Get zapped while the sun is out.
Sounds like a DA bit coming up.
All right, bring the hot Cheetos in here now. Bring them in here. Open up the door to the mothership. Beam me up the hot Cheetos and Marash.
That is like spot on, man. That is spot on.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Marash might be taking his own personal hot Cheetos challenge day here. He's out today. Glad you're with us. 39 minutes past the hour. And remember, you can listen to us on your phone if you're outside of your normal CBS Sports Radio listening area on the radio. That's okay because you can listen to us on your phone using the CBS Sports app, radio.com, or Apple Music. Or you can watch us on any device at watchda.com. The Player of the Week is brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week, Cameron Young, Quinnipiac's guard, scores 55 on Sunday. In a 107-100 triple overtime winner against Siena, he went 9 of 13 from beyond the arc, 16 free throws made. His 55 points, the most points scored by a D1 player in more than a decade. He also tallied 10 rebounds, making him the first D1 player in the last 20 years with 55 and 10. Cameron Young, the Player of the Week, brought to you by Granger. Granger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it at Granger.com. What may be the most significant Air Jordan shoe in existence was found in an abandoned mall in Milwaukee, which ironically I believe is Algonquin for the good land. I had an abandoned mall in my town as well. Brutal. I shouldn't even say that. I grew up in a little town called Warwick, New York. We had no mall. We had to drive 30 minutes to the Middletown, New York Mall, which was called the Orange County Plaza, which had all of your 80s institutions, your Orange Julius's, your Sears, your JCPenney's, your Spencer Gifts, the Wall for your tapes or CDs. And that thing started becoming dated and old and dilapidated because they opened up a new mall. And the new mall was where everything flocked to. And so we would go to the old mall and it was so depressing. You'd have the old big department stores turn into basically like flea markets. Individual sellers would just hawk their wares and it was quiet and dark and depressing. They had the old fake plant that started to just basically crack and fall apart. The old BK in there and the food court, they just shuttered. Nobody moved in. It was really bad. And so when right before it was about to close, me and my high school buddies went in there for one last turn around the Orange County Plaza, took the home movie camera in there, and it was a ghost town. I mean, I think there was tumbleweeds blowing across. And I could only imagine finding in that old mall that we used to explore the most expensive Air Jordan shoe ever. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Larry Awe, the head of maintenance at the Capitol Court Mall before it was demolished. So this guy, head of maintenance, I guess runs the janitorial staff there, the plumbing staff, what have you. Found a sneaker with Michael Jordan's signature on it in a storage room, and he recognized it when it was on display at one of the sports apparel stores in the mall that closed down. So this dude, Larry Awe, which is great, his last name is Awe, like in awe, they're putting it up for auction through Heritage Auctions. And they believe the sneaker is going to go for $20,000. The consignment director at this auction house said it was basically like a buried sports treasure. Larry had it in his own basement for 17 years. It happens to be what I consider the most significant Air Jordan shoe in existence, and I don't think we're over-exaggerating.
No, Michael.
He pointed out that the shoe is so valuable because Jordan wore the Air Jordan 1s during a game against the Bucks in 1985 before the white shoe with a black swoosh and toe was available to the public. Quote, it's identical to the shoes on Jordan's feet in the famous Jumpman advertisement that turned into an internationally recognizable Nike logo. This is insane. This is great. So this guy ran maintenance, the janitorial staff, plumbing staff, what have you, for a mall that was demolished. Before the mall was demolished, an old sports apparel store, a sneaker store, like a Foot Locker in the store, in the mall, shut down, left some stuff behind. And this dude, while going through old boxes before the place was demolished, found a Jordan sneaker and brought it home. Had it in his basement for 17 years. And watched an episode of Playmakers and was like, well, you know what? Maybe this is worth something. Or it was on the sports apparel store of Playmakers. Somehow he figured out that it was worth something. And so, boom, he says, let's take it to an auction house. And the auction house says it's worth 20 grand. Now, I don't get sneaker culture. I will readily admit I don't get it. When I buy sneakers, it's to wear, to run in, to work out in, because they're comfortable. But I see that there's an entire industry built around people that collect sneakers and don't do anything with those sneakers except put them on display or put them in their closet and look at them. I don't quite get this, but I guess it's kind of like collecting cars. You collect things, you just look at things. Although sneakers to me are to be worn and used, but okay. And I see all these kids standing in lines all over New York City and Brooklyn waiting for these next sneakers, these next Air Jordans, the next Steph Currys, the dad sneakers, whatever they are. And this guy had one in his basement for 17 years and it could be worth $20,000.
No, Michael.
Right now, there's a sneakerhead listening going, no way! I'm going to my abandoned mall in town. Unfortunately, I don't think it works that way. Pete the Body, did you ever have a dilapidated, disgraced, depressing mall that shut down in your hometown or near your hometown?
Oh, yes. It didn't shut down, but it scaled back tremendously. It was a great mall to go to, but then the big Roosevelt Field Mall opened up, and everyone went to that, and it's one of the biggest malls in the country. So the mall that we usually went to, we would go there, and it'd be the lesser foods in the food court, you know, the lesser stores in the mall.
Yeah.
So it was really depressing when you went there. I stopped going there a while ago, but it's truly depressing.
Old malls are really depressing because old malls are usually from the 70s and 80s, and so they already look dated, and they already smell dated, and the architecture's already weird to begin with. And the tile's weird, and the ceiling's weird, and the lighting's weird. And then you add to it, nobody's in there anymore. And it's like flea market stuff. And then you go, okay, if I don't leave here soon, I'm going to kill myself. This is the worst.
The last renovation, I think, was probably 2000.
And even that was kind of like pushing money into the Alliance at this point. It was like, you know, one last gasp.
I think it put like 80, they put 80 stuff in there in 2000. So it was dated then.
There you go. An Air Jordan found before a Milwaukee mall was demolished.
By God! That's the Milwaukee Brewers music!
It is time now for your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Kyler Murray addressed concerns about his size. He basically is listed at 5'10", but he's more like 5'9 and change.
People are going to say what they want to say. I don't get with the whole like 5'8", like all that. I don't understand that. But I've heard some wild stuff over the past month. But at the end of the day, it's all fun. Pretty used to it by now. So you know, like I said, we'll see. You know, combine is next week, and we'll see where, you know, how much I weigh, how big my hand is, how tall I am. We'll see all that.
Well, he's not 5'8". He's more than 5'9", but he's not 5'10". And so when you're looking at quarterbacks, there used to be, you must be more than 6 feet. 6 feet was the absolute shortest you could possibly be to be a legit quarterback in the NFL. And Drew Brees was right around 6 foot, and everybody said that's too short. Well, Drew Brees proved that it's not too short. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. Although, if you notice, Drew Brees is kind of constantly looking up. He's almost always looking up over his offensive lineman because he's kind of just at that height that's kind of difficult to be able to survey an entire field, especially as offensive linemen get bigger and stronger and taller, more massive. Then you bring in a Baker Mayfield type, and again, you're kind of worried because he's under 6 foot, but Baker was awesome. I think he comes in at right around 5'11 or so, and he was great in year number one, and clearly he was the right pick, and there's a lot to love about Baker Mayfield. But let's now chop off 2 inches from Baker Mayfield. Actually, I take that back. I guess Baker is more around 6 foot. So let's chop off 3 inches or even 4 from Baker if he's more like 6'6", 6'1", and let's make Kyler Murray 5'9.5", because he's not 5'10". Well, if you're 2 inches shorter than Drew Brees and 2 or 3 inches shorter than Baker Mayfield, those are kind of the shortest guys to really be able to do this, that is a concern, and I hope that Kyler Murray works, because I love it when things in the NFL, old, stodgy ways that we used to look at things, get blown up. I like modernizing the way that we view things. Except that I'm not going to be the one that sacrifices a top half of the first round draft pick to see if I'm right. And that might be overly conservative by me, but I think it's a mistake if you're going to draft Kyler Murray number one overall or in the top 10 or even in the top 15. You've got to be pretty damn sure that you've got everything lined up for that quarterback. And I know that we're in a quarterback-driven, quarterback-desperate league, but I think there's a lot of question marks not only about whether that size translates, but also whether Kyler Murray translates from an Oklahoma offense the same way that Baker Mayfield did. You see, Baker Mayfield, yes, part of this was how good he was technically a quarterback, but part of this was the ability to lead. By having this chip on your shoulder, by taking every slight and using it against the opponent. By motivation being a huge part of why Baker is kind of better than his tangibles, if you will. Kyler Murray doesn't necessarily bring those same intangibles to the table, so it's not really a fair comparison. Red Sox owner John Henry on offseason spending.
I think the Baltimore payroll was double what the Tampa payroll was last year, right? Some close to double. So there is a correlation, I'm sure there's a correlation, but it's not as perfect. It's very difficult to predict things in baseball, predict player performance. So spending more money helps.
Spending more money helps, but baseball owners have been given a very nice edict for them. You don't have to spend money to win. And if owners see there's the ability to not have to spend money and they can still win, they're all in on that. Now, the Red Sox obviously spend money, but the Red Sox also showed that you couldn't just spend money to win. Look at all their pieces that were homegrown last year, like Bogarts and Betts and Benintendi. So there's a lot of reason where there's a lot of reason to once again say we don't have to be the biggest buyers out there to win a World Series, and owners like to hear that. And finally, LeBron coming back after the All-Star break, sub 500 and out of a playoff spot.
Feel great. Looking forward to the second half of the season and looking forward to, you know, see what we can do to get back in this playoff race. That's my only mindset. You know, that's the only thing that's going to have my mental space for this next 2 months, you know, pretty much on how I can get this team, you know, playing the type of level of basketball we were playing before my injury.
What a wasted season for LeBron. I mean, he's at 34 years old. And clearly this team isn't going anywhere. They might make the playoffs. LeBron might put on a show in the final 30 games of the season. But let's face it, the Lakers aren't going to make it out of the second round. They clearly have a lot of issues. And once LeBron was out, it showed just how vulnerable they are, that those young guys couldn't get it done without him. So I think that LeBron went to a team that he wasn't ready to win right away. So this is on him as well. I mean, he had to know this going in. But, you know, how many years will we have LeBron at peak LeBron before it starts deteriorating? we might already be seeing it. And this is a season that he'll basically scrap to even make the playoffs and perhaps is a one and done. That's your sound check. On a Trash Tuesday, Nick tweets, I'm trashing my wife for not knowing the difference between me being mad and upset. She knows I do not allow our children in our room, let alone our bed. No matter the reason, I woke up on the edge of the bed with our 13, 7, and 3-year-olds in the bed. Hashtag, get them out.
Stinky debris.
Get them out.
That's tough. That's daddy and mommy's bed. And now you got a 13-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old all snuggled up in there.
13-year-old.
It was like bear cubs all nuzzled up in the cave. That can't happen. Give me my bed. Give me my bed. Come on. All right. More trashes when we come back here on the DA Show. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS, or on the phones, 855-212-4227. When we come back, are the Pelicans screwing their fans if they sit AD? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.